Thank you for the kind invitation to stay here for 2 weeks. I really appreciated the place. Very, very, very nice. So today I will talk about, trying to solve, microscopic models, Heisenberg models, in presence of frustrating interactions by using numerical techniques. And this work has been done essentially by two former PhD students, Yasir Iqbal in Toulouse, now in ICTP Trieste, and Wenjun Hu in Trieste, now in California, in Donna Sheng's group. And also in collaboration with other collaborators, Alberto Parola in Como, Didier Poilblanc in Toulouse, and Sandro Sorella, partially in Trieste. So the outline is very, very simple. I will give, so maybe here, most of you know very well the subject of spin liquids. So I don't need a real introduction, pedagogical introduction to spin liquids. So I will give only a very, very brief historical introduction to spin liquids. Then I will move to Heisenberg models on the frustrated square lattice. And then I will move to the second topic, which is the Heisenberg model on the Kagome lattice. So in order to describe the history of spin liquids, I would like only to comment about the evolution of life on Earth. So this is divided in different areas. So everything started many millions of years ago, and there is a period which is called the Precambrian, where only few multicellular life forms were there, and there the life was very simple and boring. Then, in the Paleozoic period, we have seen a sudden appearance of many invertebrates, but also the first vertebrates. And then there has been a quick evolution into more sophisticated animals, including amphibians with legs, so walking on the earth. And then there was a very big extinction, and dinosaurs prevailed over the others animals, and they were very simple-minded animals, so something went in some sense wrong. But fortunately, for some reason that still it's mysterious for many, dinosaurs disappeared and new forms of life developed, much clever than dinosaurs, like mammals, and eventually sort of hominoids conquered the planet. So the parallel with spin liquids is that in the 50s, we had only, we knew only ordered states of matter. So these are the only possible states we knew for magnetic systems. So life was very boring. And then Anderson in 73 suggested that it was possible to have magnetically disordered states that has been called resonating valence bond states, according to Anderson. And so we started to see something more interesting. But then, unfortunately, something went wrong. Forgive me if you don't agree. I knew it. And only dimers. But let's say then I remember a long period in which nobody believed in spin liquids in realistic, systems. And we only had essentially many papers writing about dimer order. But then in 2001, more or less, we had the first real examples. Again, maybe you don't really agree, but the first concrete examples, like quantum dimer models on the triangular lattice or some dimer model on Kagome lattices, in which we had the evidence for the existence of a true ground state with a short range order and gapped towards triplet excitations and any other excitation. And then maybe now we are evolving towards a new era in which also long-range spin liquids, maybe gapless, are possible. So this is much, of course, in a much smaller time scale, hopefully.
So in both cases, the geological one and the magnetism one, is there a reentrant phenomena where we might return to the cylinder?
Maybe. Have you seen Jurassic Park? So maybe some. So of course there are very different liquids, and the folklore in the community is that DMRG always produces excellent and good liquids, like champagne, while other methods instead don't produce such a good liquids. Of course, this is not a classification of spin liquids at all. But my work is to work not in DMRG, but trying to work with different numerical methods, in particular variational approaches based on variational wave functions, which usually contain a bias. But the point is that we are trying in these years to move and to improve our products from, let's say, not very good liquids to, let's say, better one. Maybe not a champagne, but still better. Or Brunello. Okay, so this is the introduction. So let me discuss, now we enter into the first model, the so-called J1, J2 model on the square lattice. So you have a two-dimensional square lattice in which you have a nearest neighbor and next nearest neighbor interaction. So the phase diagram at zero temperature is already quite interesting and complicated. When you don't have frustration, so when J2 is zero or very small, then you have an ordered state which has a pi-pi order. And this is this survives when you put a small frustration J2. On the other side, when J2 is very, very large and J1 is small, then still this is weakly frustrated. And you have another kind of order in which you have a pi-zero or zero-pi magnetic order. In between, you can expect having something, let's say, disordered, maybe a real spin liquid or a dimer. And unfortunately, there are only few experimental realizations of this simple model, which is the real prototypal model for frustration. We have only two materials, which unfortunately are both ordered. This based on vanadium atoms, which has a J2 much say larger than J1, so it falls here. And this other compound also based on vanadium atoms, which is here with J2 much smaller than J1. So in 2001, we did a paper with Sandro Sorella and Alberto Parola and Luca Capriotti claiming that we have some evidence for having a gapless state with Dirac cones and a Z2 structure in that model. And then I will also describe this because we are improving this state. In the meanwhile, we had many, many papers on the J1, J2. I don't have time to cite all of them. Forgive me if I don't cite your preferred one. But let me just mention that there are two interesting DMRG calculations very recently, one in the group of Leon Balance in Santa Barbara, in which they claim that there is a gapped spin liquid phase from J2 equal or less 0.4 to 0.6. And this was, to my knowledge, the first, let's say, strong evidence for having a gapped spin liquid without dimer order in this J1, J2 model. But this paper has been criticized by a few guys, especially by Sandwick, saying that indeed the evidence was not so clear and there is a possible dimer order in this region here. Then there is a more recent DMRG calculation in the group of Donna Sheng and Matthew Fisher using slightly different geometries, maybe a larger clusters, and they had evidence for having, let's say, a little bit more complicated phase diagram. They have an L, then there is a small region in which you don't have magnetic order, but still the system is gapless, and then you instead develop a plaquette valence bond order. The situation is, let's say, rather different from this one, but let's say this is also an evidence that maybe there is a region and not a point in which you have a real interesting situation in which you have a gapless spin liquid. So my job is to study this by using variational wave functions. So let me just briefly describe how can we construct the variational wave functions for ordered phases. So when you have an antiferromagnetically ordered phase, what you can do is to construct the so-called Jastrow wave functions, in which you just take the ordered phase, classically ordered phase, and you put quantum fluctuations, the Gaussian quantum fluctuations that are generated by applying the spin-spin operators orthogonal to the classical order. And this is important to put to have fluctuations orthogonal to the classical order in order to really describe the correct spin wave properties. Moreover, the Jastrow factor, which is described by this pseudo-potential V, must be rather singular. This means that in Q space must diverge like 1 over Q when Q is small. In this way, if you compute, for instance, the structure factor, the spin-spin structure factor, you clearly see that you generate a magnetic order in this correlation. So while if you only work with a short-range Jastrow factor, this is much reduced, and essentially you have the exact result. But most importantly, when you look at small q's, you have that S of q goes to zero linearly with q, in contrast to the case in which you only work with a short-range Jastrow factor. And this is important because the small q behavior of the spin-spin correlations is related to the excitation spectrum in a Feynman construction. So if you have the ground state or an approximation for it, you can construct excitations just by applying this SZ of Q, like Feynman did for the helium, applying density operator. And then a variational ansatz for the energy excitation of this state is something that goes like Q square over the density-density correlation. So if the density-density correlation is constant when Q goes to zero, this is quadratic. So you have a wrong description of the low energy spectrum. Instead, if this goes to zero linearly, you recover the spin wave spectrum. So this is important to describe magnetically ordered states. If instead you are interested in non-magnetic states, let's say one way of constructing states is by using the so-called Parton approach, in which you start from your spin operator and you split it in two using different kind of operators. Here I will consider Abrikosov fermions. So I can rewrite the spin operators in terms of creation and annihilation operator for spin. For electrons. You can describe the spin operators also by using bosons, and this will give you another family of disordered states. Then you can write the Hamiltonian in this basis of electrons, and if you want to have the correct Hilbert space, you have to project, you have to impose that you have one fermion per site. What you can do, of course, this is a very complicated problem, is to do a mean field approach in which you do a mean field over this and you will get a sort of BCS Hamiltonian in which you have pairing and hopping, besides having chemical potential and local pairing. Of course, the ground state of this has nothing to do with the spin model because this is living in a different Hilbert space with more than one fermion per site. The constraint is after the mean field approach is only valid in average, not locally. But then what you can do is to reintroduce the constraint of one fermion per site just by putting the Gutzwiller projection. And the Gutzwiller projection is the full Gutzwiller projection in which you kill all configurations that has that have more than one electron per site. Whenever you do this, then you cannot treat it analytically and you have to do numerical calculations by using Monte Carlo. If you want, in principle, what you can do is to have both. So you can have both magnetism and fermion pairing. In the BCS Hamiltonian, you can just add another term in which you impose an extra magnetic field in the X direction in order to have the correct quantum fluctuations. And in this way, you can still Gutzwiller project the ground state of this Hamiltonian. The only technical problem is that now this state is no longer a determinant, it's a Pfaffian, but this can be treated again in Monte Carlo. So let me show some result. Here I plot for the unfrustrated model, J2 equal to zero. These are old results, but maybe this is good to show. The energy per site as a function of 1 over n, which is the size of the system. And the red points are the exact in which you can do Monte Carlo here. You don't have sign problem. Then the black ones are the ones in which you put the wrong Jastrow factor, a short range Jastrow factor, and you see that the energy is variational for sure. You have a bias, but also the slope is not correct, and the slope of the side scaling is important because it contains the spin velocity, the spin wave velocity. So the spin wave velocity with this wave function is essentially zero. While if you consider the correct Jastrow factor, then the energy is slightly above, but the slope is essentially compatible with the exact one. So even though you have a small error in the energy, the estimation for the spin wave velocity is essentially good. And the same is true also if you compute the magnetization. When you do a wrong Jastrow factor, you overestimate the magnetization. When you do the correct one, then it's still larger than the exact one, but the size corrections are essentially the same. So this means that also the susceptibility is correct. If you compute the spin-spin correlations as a function of J2, you have a behavior like that. And within this wave function, you find that the magnetization vanishes around J2 equal 0.48, which is quite large compared to other approaches. But this is what is obtained with this approach. And indeed, we will see that this is compatible with the results of the gap. Hmm? And also the variational parameter delta AF, which is the one that you add here, vanishes at the same point. So here you really have that the best wave function is the one described by Abrikosov fermions. What is important in this wave function is the symmetry of the parameters. You remember that here you have hopping and pairing. And you can have different kind of symmetries, S wave, D wave, whatever. And the point is that when J2 is large enough, let's say around 0.5, the best ansatz is with a nearest neighbor hopping, a nearest neighbor pairing with the x square minus y square symmetry. And this is very well known since the work by Anderson, but the important point is that you also have a longer range pairing with the XY symmetry. And if you want to preserve the Dirac points at pi half, this is just connecting the points at distance 2, 2. And this is, we did it in 2001, and then we took a while to understand that this is indeed this appears in the Wen classification in the paper of 2002, and this is called the Z2AZZ13 in his classification. So the name is not really saying much. This is written in another gauge, so it's written differently. But indeed, we took essentially 5 to 6 years to understand that indeed we have the same states. Wen has many more. It has around 2,000. And indeed, checking not all of them, but let's say the most, interesting ones, according to Wen, we have that this is indeed the best you can do within this classification. Within the fermionic approach, the best state in the highly frustrated regime is this one. And indeed, if you compute the accuracy, for instance, of this wave function in a small 6x6 lattice in which you can do also exact diagonalization, you see that the accuracy improves a lot when you frustrate, and then you have a sort of a small plateau, and then it degrades here close to this first order phase transition towards the other magnetic state. And also the overlap between the variational state and the exact one increases, stays essentially 0.99 for a while, and then it goes down. This state is a true spin liquid. Indeed, for instance, if you compute dimer-dimer correlations, these goes to zero. In principle, you don't know, because maybe the projector can change the nature of the mean field state. So this is not, a priori obvious, but indeed we checked many different correlation functions, and this is a real spin liquid state. But of course, this is variational, so you can argue, okay, but this is maybe nothing to do with the exact ground state. What can we do? What we can do is to improve the variational state by applying Lanczos steps. So, as you probably know, if you start from any state which is not orthogonal to the exact one, then by applying the power of the Hamiltonian, you converge essentially exponentially to the ground state. This is what you do usually when you do Lanczos methods. When you do Lanczos method, you start from a random state and then you do many steps, because this is can be done on small systems, and you converge and you get the exact one. Of course, on large systems, you cannot do as many steps as you want, because of course the problem is still exponentially hard, but still you can do few steps. And what we can do is to do up to 2 steps of these methods. And then in addition, you can do a fixed node projection, which is not exact because you have sign problem, but still you can improve, and this will give an upper bound for the exact states. Of course, you don't have the exact results because you have frustration, but this is a way to go towards the exact solution. Let me show how it works, and how can we also get some information about the true ground state by using a zero variance extrapolation. So if the state is close to the ground state, then you can show it's a two line that its energy is equal to the true energy plus a term which is proportional to the variance of the state. This is true if the state is close enough. So this means that if you compute the energy per site and the variance per site, you can plot the energy versus the variance, and you can see how it works. So of course the variance for the exact ground state or for any eigenstate is zero. So if you start from a random state, you start here from the heaven with a very large energy, very large variance, and then you do many steps and you see that you converge here. But you need many, many steps. You see that this is already the step number 11 because you started from a random state. This is the case for a TJ model, but don't care. This is just to show how it works. Instead, if you start from the good state, which is here a state with a pairing constructed in a similar way, but with holes, you have that the energy is much is good, it's not bad here, but you see that by doing one Langso step, you're essentially already in the linear regime, and by doing two, you can really extrapolate easily. While if you start from a random state, in order to enter into the linear regime, you need many more steps, okay? And even if you start from a state in which you don't have pairing, you see that essentially you see some curvature and only very late you have the linear state. So by doing a variance extrapolation, hoping that the state is not very far from the exact one, you can extrapolate the exact energy. I will show that. Before showing the results for this, let me also mention why I like this approach. I like this approach because with that you can also construct excitations very easily. So, of course, you can take your variation, your mean field Hamiltonian, you can diagonalize it, and then you can construct the ground state just by filling the lowest levels. But then if you really believe in this approach, and I think that somebody here is really believing in that, and I also believe in this, you can also construct excitations just by applying quasi-particle operators. So you start from the ground state, you just destroy some states, you create some other state, and then if the approach is correct, then not only the ground state is correct, but also excitations. So this is a very, let's say, transparent way of constructing excitations. Of course, if the method is has something to do with the true Hamiltonian. So let me show this, and let me show how it is possible to compute the spin 2 gap and the spin 1 with momentum pi 0. So of course, in principle, you can construct whatever you want, but if you limit yourself to simple cases in which you have a single Slater determinant, you have the smallest excitation you can construct that are the spin 2 excitation with momentum 0, 0, and the spin 1 at pi 0. Hmm? So what you can do is to take a small system, 6 by 6, with J2 equal 0.5, where this wave function is good. And then you can do the variance extrapolation for the ground state, for the spin 1 and spin 2. And the dashed line is the exact result for the 6 by 6. And you see that for the 6 by 6, you essentially extrapolate to the exact within one error bar, not only for the ground state, but also for excitations. Okay, then you increase the system size, and of course you no longer have the exact results, but still you see that you have a essentially linear behavior. Of course you see that the wave function is size consistent in the sense that the variance is constant when you increase the system size, but the Langso steps are less and less efficient because of course this is not a size consistent approach. But still, what is, let's say, remarkable is that even with 18 by 18, so essentially 400 sites, still with one Langso step, you gain essentially more than half. So you gain a factor of 2. So you see that you are losing a bit because you see that here one Langso step increases a lot, sort of a factor of 5 maybe. But then it's less and less efficient, but still it remains efficient for remarkably large system sizes, okay? So in principle, this is not size consistent, but in practice it's like to have something size consistent. And what is important is that the spin 2 excitation, the spin 2 gap vanishes in the null phase. Of course, while the spin 1 gap at pi 0, it's finite in the null phase. Because of course, what is vanishing is the spin 1 at pi pi. But this excitation must be finite in the null phase. So what we can do is to see what's going on when you add frustration. And let me say that if the picture of this wave function is correct, you should have that at pi zero, you must have a gapless excitation because you have two Dirac points. So you have that excitations taking one spin on from here to there have zero energy. So while in the magnetic phase, pi zero excitation is gapped, in the gapless spin liquid region, if any, if this is described by this wave function, you expect a vanishing gap. So this is the main result for the spin 2 first, as a function of 1 over L, the size. So these are the DMRG results by balance and others for J2 equal 0.5 and 0.55. And these stars are the exact results on a 6x6 lattice. This is spin 1. And you see that they had a finite value. They had, while these are our results for a spin 2 excitation. This is the pure variational results, which are, let's say, not so clear. So they may be compatible even with a finite gap. So maybe the projection will open a gap, which is not, let's say, obvious. But you see that it's remarkable that when you do the Lanczos step approach and you also apply the variance extrapolation, the gap decreases. And essentially, the extrapolation is compatible with zero. We have essentially zero within one error bar, both for 0.5 and 0.55. So of course, this is, to me, a remarkable fact that you start from a gapless state at the mean field, you do the projection, and then the gap is maybe opened, nobody knows, but when you approach to the ground state, the gap decreases, and the evidence is that you have something that is essentially zero. And here you see that our results are compatible with the exact ones for a 6x6 lattice.
The DMRG results, what's the meaning of L?
They used a 2L by L cluster, but they computed the gap only in the central part. So it's L by L.
But so with periodic boundary conditions?
Periodic and open.
And for you, it's periodic and periodic?
Periodic and periodic, yeah. Yeah, so, for us, it's more difficult to use the open boundary conditions because otherwise, the mean field Hamiltonian should break translational invariance, so you have many more parameters. And you see that, okay. Then the spin one, again, this is the main result. If you compute the spin one for large systems, again, this is this is 0.45 and 5. This is again the unprojected results while you do the projection. And you see that at least for 0.5, this is compatible with a vanishing gap. And indeed, you find that plotting the extrapolated gap as a function of J2, you have that when J2 is small, you see that the gap is finite, as should be in the magnetically ordered phase with Knell order. And then this goes rapidly to zero, to a point which is J2 equal about 0.48, which is compatible with the previous one. But you see that it's totally non-trivial, this result, because you started from a state in which you have a non-projected state which is gapless, then you do a projection, and then it's hard. The point is that it's quite hard to understand if this is going to zero or not. You can have strong size effects, but let's say I can even accept that by doing the projection, you open a gap, but then you improve that, and you decrease the gap, and you remain with something which is zero here, but finite there. So it's not, a trivial result. Okay, so this is more or less what I wanted to say for the first part. So this is the partial conclusion in which by using this, let's say, alternative approach to the MRG, which is a sort of educated guess, maybe too educated in the sense that we put too much information at the beginning, starting with a because of fermions, maybe starting from another partonic state, we could have something much better. But let's say this is a sort of, let me call it, educated guess with few parameters. You only have hopping, pairing, and maybe some Lanczos step parameter, is not far from the DMRG, which is a brute force calculation. So for me, brute force is not negative in the sense that, of course, you need that. It's not, let's say, it's remarkable that using a variational wave function with only few parameters, you can have the energy which is not far from what the DMRG gives you. And also, it's remarkable.
The number of parameters in DMRG is like the elements of the.
Yeah. Also, you can interpret the DMRG as a variational calculation having the number of parameters equal to the essentially related to the dimension of the matrix you are using. But let's say the nice feature here is that you can also construct excitations in a very simple way, while in the MRG you do another brute force calculation, and so it's more a black box calculation. And the point is that we find the evidence for a gapless spin liquid. Of course, the problem is that here the gap, the interesting region is very, very small, so I cannot exclude that indeed in the thermodynamic limit you can have a point instead of a region. So maybe this wave function is only describing the critical point, and the truth is something different. So this is the point, this is the hard point. But still, if you like variational wave functions by itself, not relating to Hamiltonians, this is, I think, a stable way. With that, you can demonstrate that there are variational states that are stable, and they don't change totally the nature when you improve them.
You said the gap is only computed in the central part of the cluster.
No, in the DMRG.
In the DMRG.
Yeah.
Are they just computing a correlation function confined to the central part of the cluster?
I don't know really the detail, but I think that what they do is just, for instance, for the spin one, they just do a calculation for the S is equal to zero. They do another calculation for S is equal to one. But then I don't know how can they be sure that this S is equal to one is inside the central part. This is a subtle point that I don't know. So, but let's say, for us, I don't want to say that our calculations are, for us, we take a periodic, we take S is equal to 2, for instance, or S is equal to 1, and then we do the calculation for that, and we just subtract. And this is, in the DMRG instead, they have to do this nasty, elimination of the outside part, which is not totally clear. I don't know if... So they don't do the full calculation with the whole cylinder, because they have strong size effects. But I don't know how they really do.
What can be said is that the quality of the result is not expected to be as good as the ground state. That's for sure.
So let me turn to the Kagome lattice. This is much shorter, maybe. So. What you can do is to study the same model, so Heisenberg model on the Kagome lattice, and the motivation is coming from many experiments on Herbert Smithite done in a group of Philippe Mendels also in MIT and many other places. And experimentally, what they find is that you don't have any order, and also the gap seems to be very, very small. I don't want to really explain the experimental results with, our calculations, because real materials are more complicated, having also Jaworzynski-Moria interactions. So maybe the situation is more complicated. Let me just list among many, many calculations, the most important ones. Again, forgive me if you don't see your name here, because listing all the works on Kagome lattice maybe will take, let's say, one seminar. These are, let's say, numerical calculations done with different techniques. And in red, I just highlighted the best one, which is again DMRG by Stephen White, which found a Z2 gapped spin liquid with a very good energy. And this has been confirmed by also a sort of different SU2 DMRG calculation in the group of Schwollock. And then there is this variational approach based on the same method I described before in the group of Patrick Lee and Xiaogang Wen, in which they proposed that a U1 gapless spin liquid may be present. Of course, I don't want to enter into too many details. The problem is that in two dimension, a U1 spin liquid maybe is not stable. But still, they constructed a fermionic state with U1 symmetry that has a quite good energy. And then there are many, many others. Let me describe what Patrick Lee and Wen did together with Ran and Hermele. According to them, they proposed that a wave function, a variational wave function for this Kagome lattice can be constructed by only considering hopping, so no pairing, but non-trivial fluxes through hexagons and triangles. And indeed, the best state proposed by them has a pi flux through hexagons and zero flux through triangles. And this state at the mean field level has Dirac excitations. Then there is also another state which has a much higher energy, which is the uniform state in which you have a zero flux everywhere. Then this is gapless, and this is U1. So when White came out with his results, Patrick Lee and collaborators did a classification in the same spirit as Wen did for the square lattice. And within the fermionic approach, you had 20 possible Z2 states. They were looking for Z2 states. But among these 20 that I don't want to mention, because also I don't understand everything, but they have four possible gapped spin liquids, only one connected to the Dirac state. So the connected means that you can switch some new parameter and open a gap with the Z2 state, and four states connected to the uniform one. So we were quite fast, and just after reading this paper, we did the numerical calculations. They did this classification only at the mean field level. We did the numerical calculation in the presence of the Gutzlier projection. And we showed that the Dirac state, the U1, is remarkably stable when you allow for having a Z2 breaking term. So if you optimize the wave function, minimizing its energy, the real minimum is when this pairing breaking term is zero. So indeed, even though you don't expect that this U1 state is fully stable, is stable against opening a gap through this mechanism. And we also showed that it's totally stable when you try to dimerize it with different possible pattern. So essentially, the U1 state is globally stable against any possible perturbation, which is remarkable. Then what you can do is, again, to do the variance extrapolation as before. And just to check the accuracy, we can do this on the 48 sites, which is a 4x4x3 lattice in which Andreas Laukli claimed to have the exact results, still not published, but seen it in APS in Boston. So this is public. And this is the exact energy according to him for this cluster. What you can do is to try to extrapolate with different wave functions. So for instance, for the uniform, you see that you start very high here, and then you essentially extrapolate to this value. You can start from the U1, which is this one, or you can even impose a Z2 term, which is not the best, but indeed you see that the energy is higher. You can do an extrapolation, and you see that on this small lattice, you always extrapolate to the same point, which is good in the sense that you expect that this approach really gives you the exact result. So on a small system, you don't really care if you start from one wave function or from the other. Let me say that the extrapolation is slightly higher than what Andreas told us, and essentially even a little bit higher, but compatible within a couple of error bars to the DMRG results on a torus by White. So we are not totally off. Then again, you can increase the system size, and you can do the same on 108, 144, 192, and you can extrapolate at the variational level. You can even do a fixed node, and you do the same for the fixed node approach, and you can estimate the energies as a function of the size of the system. And let me say that if you increase the system, so you take a 192 size, which is I think 8 by 8 by 3, you extrapolate from the U1 or from a Z2, which is again not a minimum, but you can impose to have this, you see that now you have a deviation. So the extrapolation for the U1 is lower than for the Z2. So in principle, you expect that this is better connected to the ground state. You can do the thermodynamic extrapolation of the energy, and this is our result, which is not far. This is a quite small scale, and essentially within three error bars, we have the similar results as DMRG. So it's only slightly above this. Then let me conclude in this last maybe 5 minutes describing the computation of the S equal to 2 gap. Here, again, we can compute S equal to 2 gap at 0, 0. This is a mean field result that is, of course, gapless by construction. You do the projection, and you still have something which is gapless, again, which is not trivial, because in principle, the projection can change the nature of the U1 state. So the U1 state is really remarkably stable. I don't know if it is stable against all possible perturbation, but still this is stable against opening a gap. And what you can do is to do the Lanczos step extrapolation for the ground state and for the S equal to 2. We can extrapolate separately S equal to 0 and S equal to 2, and then compute a gap, and this is the main result. So this is the pure variational result, which is clearly gapless. Of course, when you apply Lanczos steps, you are limited to smaller systems, and calculations are much heavier, so you have a much larger error bar. I don't know how can you interpret this fan here, but this is just to give you a sort of fair extrapolation. So the real extrapolation is compatible again with zero. So it's negative, but it's zero within one error bar. And sort of fair upper bound within this approach is given by something like 0.02 for the spin 2 gap. So this means that if the spin 1 is half of this, the spin 1 should be not much larger than 0.01, which is much smaller than what White computed, and more similar to the recent calculation by Nishimoto and Hotta, using the grand canonical DMRG. I don't know if I don't want to enter into the details and let's say fights among different DMRG techniques. What they computed is something which is 0.05 with an error bar essentially of 0.2. So again, these are not in, say, within a couple of error bars, they are maybe. But let's say the point is that within this approach, the spin one gap seems to be much smaller than what White computed. And let me just finish saying that, of course, this is a variational approach, so maybe it's biased, but I'm happy to see that if you increase, if you put a second nearest neighbor super exchange, you have that a gapped Z2 state at the end beats the U1 for J2 larger than 0.1. So the energy gain is very, very small, but you can see it. While for J2 equal to zero, you don't have any gain, then the gain is larger and larger when you have J2. And you have that for between 0.1 and 0.3, where a magnetic state will win, you should have a Z2 state. This is the magnetic state you construct from the Jastrow state with Q equal to zero. And this is true for both, even when you increase the system, the gain is a little bit increasing. And what we are doing now is to do Lanczos step extrapolations for the case where you have a finite J2. And so these are the conclusions. Again, let me say that the issue is still problematic. Maybe DMRG is totally right. Maybe not. Let me say that I like this approach because it's very flexible. In principle, you can describe many different phases. So in principle, I don't see any reason why it should fail. At least the phase diagram should be, let's say, qualitatively correct in the sense that maybe the boundaries of different phases are a little bit shifted, but still phases are there, so we see a Z2 gapped phase. Maybe even at the J2 equal to zero, you have it. We don't see just because it's not precise, but by putting J2, we have it. And it's also good because there is a natural way also constructing and understanding low energy states, which is not present in DMRG. And this can be improved by doing more work like Lanczos steps or fixed node. The problem is that it's still biased, so nobody knows if indeed this is the correct starting point or maybe something else must be done. Okay, thank you very much.
What about the singlets that are supposed to span the that region there? Can
this
that,
is
can you say anything about the spectroscopy of the singlets? And,
this is a very good question. I don't know. Indeed, this can be, let's say, understood and explained in a short range valence bond picture, like what Frédéric did. Here it's difficult, but I should say that also in the MRG, this is not clear why you should have this so many singlets at low energy.
But my question is that...
How can you describe it, them?
Can you describe them and can you benchmark the description on the small system and see what the wave function...
In principle, in principle, even if you don't have visons here because it's a U1, but suppose that you put a small term in which you have a Z2, so you have a quantized fluxes. What you can have is that you have bisons. And bisons are known to be essentially very localized. So in principle, these singlets may be connected to the fact that you have bisons excitations in the coupled to spinons. So in principle, it's quite difficult to construct this because you break translational invariance in the wave function, but you could just put it. Break some flux, so put a zero flux, for instance, in one hexagon, and then diagonalize this, and then maybe excite some spinon. and you could describe it. But this is quite hard because in order to have a translational invariant wave function, then you need to restore translational invariance and you need many determinants. So this is something that...
you mentioned about the stability of the U1 liquid. What about stability against chiral symmetry vacuum? Like if you put a pi by 2 flux?
This is we tried, and this is also stable.
Stable.
Yes. If you put a J3, then eventually you have an instability. Then it's, say, I don't know what is the best chiral state when J3 is finite, but for sure we can construct a couple that have lower energy than U1.
And I just wanted to comment about this bias. It's not negative, it's positive, because you use the physics.
It depends on the point of view. See?
No, also,
I like very much your point of view, but I know that others...
Yeah, so in DMRT calculation, this spin equal 1 gap is pretty large. And so in your calculation, I think this spin 1 gap also large. So how do you understand this?
I understand this difference now. This is saying that maybe the DMRG is... So the DMRG is biased in the sense that it favors low entangled states. So,
yeah, but this, the triplet gap is very stable. In any kind of calculation, you see this very large.
I agree, but again, I don't want to enter into many details. But according to Nishimoto, for instance, and Hotta, they show that if you take a different cluster shape, which is more symmetric, so a sort of diamond, they got a different side scaling. So maybe the geometry of long cylinders is not perfect, and you have strong size effects at the end.
No, the triplet gap does not have
the size. You never know, because of course you never know if eventually you have this. But let's say, Nishimoto showed that you have a different, let's say, size effects if you have cylinders or diamonds.
Yeah, this is equal to zero gap, I agree. The singlet gap is very sensitive.
No, but also the triplet.
The triplet gap.
Also the triplet.
The triplet gap, you can do extrapolation, but in any kind of geometry, you will see it's finite. Yeah,
no, but
the variation much smaller.
No, but let me say just that if you do this, maybe you don't believe in to this grand canonical DMRG, but if you do the side scaling with the diamonds, then the extrapolation is much smaller, is 3 times smaller. And they claim that indeed with this infinite cylinders, by doing first the extrapolation in the X and then in Y, you put a lot of bias. But
yeah, but other variation method like tensor network, I think that the ground state variation energy can be lower than your variation energy, and also show this explanatory k in spin spin coverage, which means it's shorter.
So the energy is not so small, so small, because this is the DMRG, so you see that they also have an error bar due to the extrapolation. And in a few error bars, we are essentially compatible.
But in this comparison, already to the projection, right? Before projection, because the thermodynamic wave function proposes a direction wave function before projection. Because if we do projection, then this energy is really size dependent. And it's not really a thermodynamic.
What kind of projection? The Goetz-Wheeler projection? Oh.
Yeah, the
Lanczos?
I mean the Lanczos projection, but before you do the Lanczos projection, the energy is not so good.
Because, yeah, but I do the Lanczos just to improve the, so I why do you, I want to believe in the Lanczos, so why don't you
I
don't?
Mean, Lanczos is very kind of a system size dependent, it's not a variational wave function.
No, the extrapolation is so for every you see that again the when you increase the system, now maybe it's not totally clear, but you see that here for 48, you have something like that. So all calculations here are variational. It's true that it's not size consistent in the sense that the first Langson step, the energy goes up, you see? But the extrapolation is essentially size consistent because you are, this is, I think, clear, more clear in this previous. So you see that when you increase the system, this point goes towards this, but the slope remains constant. So the extrapolation is size consistent. We can.
Any other questions? Not then, let's thank you.